The committee would come to order, please. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. It is February 16th, Thursday, approximately 3:35 in the afternoon. Members who are present at this time, Senator Elton, Senator Wagner, myself, and Senator Huggins. We have one bill up for introduction to the committee today. It is a bill that actually I have put in under the sponsorship of the State Affairs Committee. As you may know, the State Affairs Committee is the committee of jurisdiction over issues dealing with the permanent fund. And what I've done is introduced a bill, an idea that was brought to me for consideration at the end of the session last year. And what I'd like to do is have Heather Brakes walk us through the proposal, and then we'll see where discussion takes us from there. Heather?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Heather Brakes, staff to Senator Terrio. This legislation would set up a very streamlined mechanism, making it easier for Alaskans to donate money to charitable organizations. As the bill is drafted currently, it provides for the permanent fund dividend division, the permanent fund division, Department of Revenue, to contract with an agent to implement and administer the program. It's very similar to what is being done currently with the university college savings account through the dividend application. The bill allows for contributions to be made through the electronic application only, and allows for a individual to select a varying dollar amount or percentage of their permanent fund. As you know, when we apply for our dividend, we don't know what that full amount is going to be until the following September, October. So this proposal would allow for a percentage to be donated to a qualifying organization. It provides for the department to contract with an agent, and that agent would pay for the implementation and administrative costs for the first 3 years, and after that, the purpose being that for the first 3 years, 100% of the donations would go to the qualifying organizations. After that point, those administrative costs would be taken out of the donations and applied equitably to all of the recipients. The agent would also be responsible for the due diligence on the applicants, including verifying their financial audits, sending out tax information to donors, and pay for the initial system upgrades to design the application, load it in the system, confirm that groups which have applied and been accepted to the program would then that they're still able to receive the funds and administer them to recipients once the money becomes available. There's an estimate that there's approximately 500 qualified organizations and right now, and those organizations would have to apply to be included on the form. And the qualifying criteria set out in the bill, would require that an organization be a 501c3 and have that status for the two calendar years prior to application. Also that they have a 990 form, IRS form on file. They have a local voluntary board or advisory group. As the bill's drafted now, they would receive $100,000 or 5% of their annual receipts from contributions. If they have an annual budget that is higher than $250,000 in the preceding fiscal year, then they must supply a financial audit to the agent, which has been conducted by an independent certified accountant. And there's a requirement that would prohibit any of any organizations that make grants or contributions to 501c4s or c6s from being eligible to be on the list. The legislation is drafted allowing for a three-year program that would have to be reauthorized by the legislature. And the costs right now, the Rasmussen Foundation has estimated there to be the annual cost to administer the program at about $300,000 a year. And that would, that includes the initial startup costs of the program. So.
Thank you. So as Heather has explained, and the other day I made a few comments on the floor of the Senate, we've tried to structure the eligibility the way we have for a couple reasons, to drive the contributions and restrict the contributions to entities that we hope are not controversial in nature. They are established. They have shown support from the community already. It's not something that springs into being just to take advantage of a potential checkoff. They actually have to be able to show some community support in order to ultimately become eligible. By putting the restrictions on so that you cannot have a 501c3 that then grants money to C4s and C6s, which can engage in political expenditures, lobbying activities. We really want the money to flow through to programs that that provide a benefit, direct benefit in the public. And we have, if you look at the title, where we have charitable organizations that provide positive youth development programs. So that could be Big Brothers Big Sisters. That could be Little League of Fairbanks, youth football in Anchorage, workforce development, can be training programs, Aid to the Arts, that's Concerts Association, you know, drama club, things of that nature. And then you get into services, aid services for the elderly, low-income individuals, emergency situations. That could be Salvation Army that provide assistance to burnout victims and things of that nature. So really try to restrict it as best we can to those entities that I think if you were to stop 10 people on the streets and say we're contemplating putting together a system whereby people would be able to funnel charitable contributions to these entities, that is, it's not any of the entities that I would hope those 10 people, the 10 random citizens, would have any problem with. That, let's see. Heather also indicated, Heather, could you walk us through the math that gets us to the suggestion that there would be 500 possible entities?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now in Alaska, there are 3,000 nonprofits that are registered, 2,000 of which have current 990 tax returns on file. Of that 2,000, 1,000 have audits, and approximately 500 of those receive at least 5% from charitable giving.
And the other thing that I did mention the other day, I'm not sure if it's in everybody's packet, but in the December 26th, the Time magazine, they had a graph of charitable giving across the nation, and in the west coast of the U.S., which includes Alaska and Hawaii, it indicates that it is the highest per capita, or what they term to be the most generous region. So I'm not sure exactly how Alaska breaks out in that geographic grouping. Per se, so I guess the article suggests that we already have a good deal of charitable giving, and I'm just looking at the what we hear from charities around the state when we have natural disasters, and Alaskans dip into their wallet to help with national entities. We quite often hear that our local charities quite often feel the brunt of that. So just trying to come up with a very streamlined way, take advantage of the Rasmussen Foundation's offer to underwrite the startup costs for a number of years. We do have Jeff Clark online to answer questions on behalf of the Rasmussen Foundation. It's not my intent to move the bill today. I know that Diane Kaplan would like to be available to testify before the committee contemplates any particular action on the bill, but I did want to get it before the committee members today to see if you have questions or criticisms. Senator White.
One thing I noticed, this is 207, 208, 209, and when we talked about, I can't remember the Senate bill, the $250, the fuel, the permanent fund people at that time said it was going to take quite a while to redo the program, to adapt the program to take care of that. Would this cause any rewrite of the program, computer program?
We do have personnel here from the Department of Administration to respond to questions. I do not believe so. I think if I'm remembering the testimony on that, that indicated that there was a large reprogramming cost for what they're portraying as a fairly antiquated system, because the system is developed to issue you and me one check each year and only one check. This would be an addition to the system, the electronic system that would collect up money and then the division would write a check to the individual charity. But it does not change the fact that Tom Wagner is only going to get one check each year. But why don't we have Sharon come forward and enter into the fray here.
Mr. Chairman, Sharon Barton, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. In our quick assessment of the computer cost specifically, it would still take some substantial changes to the computer system to recognize the request to deduct a certain amount for a given organization for each individual. In this case, it's further complicated by lots of different amounts that are possible under the proposal, and perhaps as many as 500 entities. So the system would have to be geared up to do that. The initial estimate of cost for that, including the changes to the web application, the website, and so on, to allow it to be done through the online application would be about $200,000 if we don't include paper. If we include paper applications, which is not envisioned in the bill at this time, it would be a little bit more than that. So that is our best estimate at the moment for what changes would be needed electronically to accomplish.
Okay. Senator Wagner.
My question was more, I figured it would cost us more. The timing, what would the timing be to where you could do 207?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, we have a little bit more time with this one than we did with the March 31st deadline on the other proposal, admirable as it was.
I haven't given up yet.
Although the process would begin almost immediately after the legislation was passed to get the list together, the payment would not occur until October of 2007. So I'm going to be an optimist and say that that would not be a problem that we could get at. We need to have a contractor do it. Our staff don't have the capacity to do it in that time frame, but hopefully we could get a contractor on board to do the work for us in that time frame.
Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Well, for a couple of questions, but as a follow-up to Senator Wagner's question, I mean, it would be interesting to know yours and Sharon's interpretation of line 25 on page 3, because is the permanent fund dividend for 2007, is that issued in 2008? It seems to me that we need to determine whether it's the payment made in 2007 or whether it is the permanent fund dividend for 2007, because they're two different.
The dividend for 2007 is determined by your residency in 2006.
Correct.
Yes. So we would be working, they would have a year to prepare for the electronic application that would be first available to residents to fill out in January 1st, 2007.
So the net effect of this bill, I mean, we wouldn't have the checkoff option until October of 2007.
No, the application, we're like halfway through the application period for the check that will be issued this year.
But that, I would think of that as the check for 2006.
That's the way I think of it, is this check for 2006. The application part is the beginning of the calendar year 2006. The check is paid in October of 2006.
I may not be asking this artfully, but the language of the bill is the permanent fund dividend for 2007. Is that for your residency in 2007, or is that the check that is issued in 2007?
The check that is issued in 2007.
Chairman. Mr. Chairman, that's Senator Elton.
It used to be.
That's how I interpret the bill too. We refer to the dividend that will be paid in October as the 2006 dividend. I'm interpreting this as the one to be paid in 2007.
And Senator, you could certainly we could ask the drafter if adding the word issued.
Yeah,
or dividends issued.
I don't know if it's a big deal, but I mean, it could be confusing. Obviously it confused me, which is not necessarily the threshold test.
Yeah.
I have a couple of other questions.
Sure, go ahead.
And kind of you, I guess. I mean, how do we handle, I'm assuming that under this bill, a parent could not make a contribution from a minor child's check? I mean, or could they?
Senator, I guess I envision that, yes, they could. Certainly, we know that there are parents out there who have the checks issued or direct deposited. In fact, Sharon, can you tell me right now if my son's name is Justin, all our checks are direct deposited into separate banking accounts. Could I have my son's check deposited into my checking account?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you could, and we would honor, to go a step further, we would honor a request by a parent to make there's no reason in our statutes, let me say, to prohibit us from honoring a request from a parent to make a donation from a child's PFD.
And I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I just wanted to be clear. I mean, the next logical question then would be, what about a minor who is in the custody of the state? I'm assuming we would not allow the state to make a contribution on behalf of that minor child in the state's custody.
Well, certainly, Senator, it's not my intent to allow that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, there's nothing in our statutes that would allow a state agency to do that either.
Okay. And then my last question for now. And again, Mr. Chair, there are some committee bills sponsored by committees that I sit on that make me uncomfortable. This one doesn't. So, but I'm not sure I understood, Heather, on what you were talking about with the administrative costs and how what the switchover is after the first few years. I didn't understand that part.
Thank you, through the chair. Senator Elton, as it's drafted now, the intent is that the agent would pay for the administrative or implementation costs for the first 3 years of the program. If the program were reauthorized, those costs would then be distributed to all of the recipient organizations equally.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
So there would have to be a formula that would be derived to spread the cost amongst the recipients, those entities that actually receive money, because you wouldn't want a charity that was on the list, but nobody checked that box necessarily to pay a portion of the administrative cost. They should not have to pay for something they're not receiving money from. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears to me that I think the lowest increment we list is $10, that we might want to look at some sort of floor. I'm not so sure by the time you do that with administrative costs where $10 is practical or not, maybe. Maybe 100. I'm not sure what the number would be. The other one is, assuming we start holding checks for college students, I assume that would be as simple as if we're holding your check, you can't designate it to go someplace.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, we haven't thought that through, but if a person who was delayed in their payment, should that bill pass, designated a donation, that donation would simply be held until that PFD was paid to the individual, at which time the deduction would be made. Would be the same as if there were a garnishment on it. We can't pay a garnishment yet either if the dividend is not paid to the individual, so it would just be held until such time as it's paid.
Okay, thank you.
Senator, I would think that for ease, we could certainly make that policy call, just so things don't get that much more complicated, that if a check is being held, if there's legislation that passes that checks are being held, that that a deduction from those checks would not be allowed, because we're not sure is the check going to be held for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. So I would like to avoid that complication, perhaps if there's an easy statutory way to do it. And with regards to the $10, $25, or percentages, I'm not wed to anything there in particular. If the committee again wishes to make things or simplify things, we could determine that, you know, it's $50, $100, maybe up to $250. I guess what we would need to realize is if there's somebody out there that wants to donate their entire dividend, do we preclude their ability to do that? But again, I could see that the computer program could get that much more complicated by letting people have all kinds of percentages or hard dollar amounts. Do we want to just keep it to percentages and have, you know, 10%? 25%, 30%, 50%. I'm open to whatever the committee and the division thinks is the most workable and understandable. Let's see, Senator Elton, I thought you had said something that spurred a line of questioning for me. Now I can't think of it. Why don't we go to see if Mr. Clark is online. Jeff Clark, are you online?
Mr. Chair, I am here.
Hey, have you heard anything in the testimony that we've had today that prompts you to want to make a response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Clark. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Rasmussen Foundation. Appreciate the opportunity to make a comment. Senator Terrio, referenced a Time article that characterized the giving levels of citizens in the Western region. I just wanted to briefly talk about the impact that individuals have nationally in charitable giving. And in 2003, there was $241 billion of charitable giving to the nonprofit sector in the United States, and individuals accounted for 83% of that, or slightly more than $200 billion. And I think that's a fact that most people are not aware of. Really is the individual who powers the nation's philanthropy, and it's not larger institutional funders like the rest of the nation. And then when we look at Alaska, the statistics tell a little different story, and Alaskans typically give about 30% less of their annual income to nonprofits than do their peers nationwide. So this, the benefit of this proposed legislation is that it really provides an outstanding service to Alaskans. When Alaskans undertake the process of surveying the nonprofit landscape, what they're going to see is a very fragmented landscape, one in which you have to kind of search out organizations that you might identify with. And I think the service here is that once a year, when going through the dividend application process, Alaskans would have the opportunity to consider a range of Alaskan nonprofits for charitable contributions. And we believe that the potential here in Alaska for individual giving should be on par with the rest of the country.
Thank you. Now, the in the discussion with the Rasmussen Foundation, they have been very interested in having the opportunity also available in the paper application. And Sharon, can you talk about the additional expense that would be incurred, and then perhaps go into a discussion on the how effective your encouragement of Alaskans filing electronically has been? I mentioned that in my floor comments the other day, but perhaps if you would go over that too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The additional costs associated with paper, first of all, involve some more programming of the computer. As I recall, it was about $40,000 more programming costs to include the paper application. Then we will need to include forms, and perhaps even with just the online option, you all would want some information already in the booklet on the program and what it does and what the list of entities is. That might be there already as part of a cost, so the incremental costs will be to include the checkoff space on the application form itself, included both in the booklet and in all the forms that we make available around the state in paper format. The dilemma there and the additional cost comes from the fact that we have no real estate left on the application form as it is now. We could perhaps squeeze in a one-liner, but that's about all the space there would be on the application without taking the font down to a point that people like me could no longer read it for sure. So it would need an extra page in the application, and then so there's the cost of the extra page, which at last year's cost it seemed to me to put an extra page in the booklet and additional forms was somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000 a page. And then there will be also additional postage costs on the booklets as we're sending them out. We're sitting right now in a price break, and the additional pages would put the booklet into the next price range for postage. I haven't estimated that what it would amount to, but something more for postage. So that's the kinds of costs that would be additional with paper. And if I were to have to put a dollar amount on it, I would think that it would be somewhere, I've said the computer cost would be 40, I would think it wouldn't exceed another 10, so 50,000 more for paper, roughly.
Okay. And then how about the success that you're having with regards to electronic application?
Mr. Chairman, the response to online in January was just overwhelming. We had 282,000 people, 282,000 people apply just in January. Last year, for all 3 months, we had only 211,000. So we were very pleased with the success of the incentive idea for getting people to file early. February's been very slow, but February is typically slow. People file in January or they file in the last 2 weeks of March, and the rest of the time it is slow. We're hoping for 350,000 before the end of the application period this year. So something over half of our people applying online, and we've had such good feedback this year that we are hopeful that next year will grow again. So we're on our way with online filing.
Mm-hmm. Good. And the way I guess I envision this, and perhaps when we have a hearing next, or maybe somebody that can talk about the technology, I guess, you know, if I'm one of the reasons that I also didn't the additional cost, but the handling of the paper coming back into your office, you know, that's additional people, storage, processing, mm-hmm. Trying to avoid all of that. But I'm trying to envision how it would work electronically. And that's not to say that you being from Interior Alaska, I might not be interested in the food bank of Homer, but I'm not likely to be. And if it's just a big list, I'm not sure exactly how we would put things with it. Is it just going to be alphabetic? But clearly, if I'm in Homer electronically, I could be able to go, and it might prompt me to say, put in your community, put North Pole or Fairbanks, and it narrows it down. Then it says, well, are you interested in youth sports? That narrows it down. You know, so I don't have to scan through looking for the ice skating club of North Pole. If in fact they're on the list, there will be a way for it to electronically get me there more quickly. Perhaps we just need to have some thought given to how that would electronically, how that would be made possible. But I guess that's what I envision, not to say that's the ideal situation. But just to, again, make it easy for people to make a donation, basically. So. Your other committee members have a question, Senator Ellen?
Just, you know, to let you know, and maybe you already know the answer to this, but one of the things that I'm going to ask my staff to check into, is to find out, I'm trying to look at what the possible consequences could be, and so I'm going to have my staff look into the issue of, you know, what local contributions to schools can mean. If in fact elementary schools in a small but wealthy community are eligible, I can see that there could be a considerable amount of money that's diverted to that elementary school that's on the list. That may not be true in Quethlock. It's also implicated a little bit by the fact that if schools are in, my guess, and Sharon can nod her head or not, but it's my guess that most of the paper applications probably come from the more rural parts of the state where they might not be as wired in or as used to the technology. And so if you have a differential that this is available, you know, to the online applicants, but not necessarily for those who file by paper, that can cause a shift in how those donations go. So those are just kind of, you know, the tug on the clothesline at this end. How does it jiggle at the back end? So those are the kind of issues that I'm going to have my staff look into, and Heather may want to do that also. I don't know that it does implicate, for example, local caps on what local communities can give to a school. But I doubt, for example, that Dutch Harbor is going to be giving to Juneau schools.
I wouldn't think that it would impact the local support. It doesn't enter into that at all. I guess right now is there's a PTA organization for the North Bull Middle School, and the contribution that it brings to youth sports at the school or whatever, or even paying for, you know, a new desk in the library, does not factor into the local community's responsibility to support education in any way. Do members have any comments over the specific dollar amounts beyond what Senator Huggins had on, you know, the $10? Do we want to have a floor in there, or do you have any thought about whether you want to allow somebody to give away their entire dividend? And we've had to put language in here that says if somebody over subscribes the amount of the dividend, you know, how does the program then ratchet back everybody to live within the total dollar amount that's available? But do you have any concerns? Should we just set a few choices? Should we just leave it wide open? What's your thought?
I'll start off, and I mean, I'll just give an example that I think all of us are familiar with. I mean, when we go out and ask for support for our careers, I mean, I get a $5 check. I get checks that are considerably more than $5. It seems to me that the best way of doing it would be open-ended, let them fill in an amount without restrictions. I mean, if in fact you set the floor too high, I think there are going to be some people fall out of the program. But I understand that, you know, the more wide open it is, the more difficult it's going to be for, you know, the people that administer the program and for the division. But I think you offer, I guess I'm arguing against a specific floor. I would probably argue against a floor of 100 more strongly than I'd argue against a floor of 50. But I think the more options a person has, the more likely they will be to participate, especially at the bottom.
Senator Wagner.
Well, if we do this online, the computer, I mean, if a person makes 8 selections, say, the aggregate's going to be figured in by a computer, so they won't allow them to go over the amount of the dividend check anyway. You shouldn't. That would be programmed in. So that's not a worry. But at the same time, dealing with dollars and cents and everything else, I think probably should be some amounts, acceptable amounts, and then have the final one up to.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I recall, Senator Green put in a bill some time back that I think passed. It was about being able to put your permanent fund dividend into education, as I recall. And I think it leans up against zero, the number of people that have taken advantage of that. I'm not sure. As I recall, that was the case. My feeling, quite frankly, is that, you know, the business of having people spread around $10 increments for the system, I would recommend looking at a higher increment overall, in that not to exceed the total value of an annual dividend, so that we don't get into look backs and things of that nature, and have them prioritized so that if you start to run over the last one listed, we'll get the smaller amount, sort of thing, so that you don't have to run through a whole bunch of scenarios to figure out which one gets the most and which one gets the least amount of money, so we don't create a headache for ourselves.
Well, I think Senator Wagner's probably right. We're all, I'm sure, familiar with websites where you either leave some information out or you enter something correctly and you get the response comes back with the red line that says, you know, you've done something incorrect here. You know, it could very easily say you've oversubscribed the amount that you have to give. Sharon, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, the one comment being that we don't know what the dividend amount will be when they have to subscribe, so we absent direction from you all, would assume that we'd work up down from the top of the list in paying the entities, and when they run out of money, we, rather than prorate, if you wanted them prorated, that would be a possible too, but the simpler way would be
Heather, there's language in the bill of draft here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's on page 2 and the end of line 2. If the total amount of contributions elected by an applicant exceeds the amount of the permanent fund dividend, that applicant is entitled to receive. Contributions shall be deducted from the dividend in the order the organizations elected by the applicant appear on the contribution list. And that is the reason that the drafters have put in language to say that every year the list of recipient organizations will be reordered, so that the Ice Skating Club of North Pole is not always the last on the list and therefore receives the least amount of money.
Okay. Any other comments? Sharon?
One more comment. Another option, Mr. Chairman, to appear on the contribution list, which might be unpalatable to some people or less palatable to some people, could be in the order in which they made the election on their application. Either we could program it either way, but then you don't get into the problem of where they were on the entity list.
Mm-hmm. I would think, though, that knowing that when it comes election time, they rotate our names on the ballot, that any of these entities is going to want to make sure that they don't get stuck at the bottom of the list. Who knows if you're going to scroll down that far. But let's see, one of the other issues. The requirement that the entities have receives at least $100,000 or 5% of its total annual receipts from contributions. So again, we're looking for entities that receive already a good deal of support from the community, so they show that they've got community support. But then number 8 has completed and provided to the Department of Financial Audit that, for the fiscal year immediately preceding. If the total annual budget, so Heather, that language would not preclude a smaller entity from participating. It's just that if they are a larger charity that have a $250,000 annual budget, then they have to fulfill this requirement. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions?
Well,
Senator Wagner?
Maybe it's a statement more than a question. But going back to, you mentioned Senator Green's attempt to get people to donate their permanent fund check to education was kind of a flat potato when it got started. Are we talking maybe about spending $200,000 to $300,000 and setting this program and having the same thing happen here?
Well, of course.
What's the interest in the community?
What Senator Green did was just set up an account by which people could make a donation. And of course, how many people know about that? What we're attempting to do here is it will be part of the electronic application. I'm not sure if the Rasmussen Foundation would have any kind of advertising campaign. Certainly all of the different charities out there that are on the list would also be encouraging Alaskans to avail themselves of the opportunity to make a donation. But this sets up a pilot program. We're hoping that although we cannot specifically steer things to the Rasmussen Foundation, they are very likely to be the only entity out there that is willing to bid on an RFP and pick up the tab for the administrative expense for, you know, 3 years. If in fact there's no response or very little response, and then at the end of the 3-year trial that is again paid for most likely by the Rasmussen Foundation or another entity, then the entire thing would sunset. So we give it a try. The administrative expense is picked up by, you know, somebody other than the state treasury while we try it and see how it works out. Go ahead.
One more. The reason I made that statement, I just see the people that would give on this are the people that are probably already giving to United Way and Salvation Army. You know, everybody has a charity. My wife and I happen to have a charity that we give to is Salvation Army. And we do it every year. And I just see this may be a very expensive way to channel us to giving in this manner versus writing a check each year. And I'm just wondering how much is going to be gained by this, just the overall, because Alaska is, you said this earlier, Mr. Chairman, Alaska is a very giving state, and we do give a lot to charities and a lot to different organizations. So, and then I start thinking about over the life of this, maybe $750,000 administrative costs. I'm just wondering how much difference in giving it's going to make. That's the whole point of this, is to get people to give more or more people to give, and I'm not sure it's going to be out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator, I bet if you talk to any sizable or sophisticated charity, they'll tell you the easier that you make it to give, the more givers you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You and your wife may swap out dollar for dollar what you would normally write a check for. You may be doing now just through this checkoff, but the hope certainly would be that now it'll be not only you and your wife, but your next door neighbor who perhaps never has really given to charities, and that you really grow the pool. But we'll see. Senator Elton?
Two things. And the first is, and you don't need to answer today. I mean, I appreciate the way you operate the committee, where we discuss issues and have an opportunity to ask questions again as we think about it more. The question is the threshold of $250,000 for the annual budget, and those people don't have to provide an audit. And I'm curious as to how we got to $250,000. I mean, it almost seems to me that anybody that wants to participate in this program ought to have an audit regardless of what their annual budget is, because, I mean, when I make a decision to give, I mean, I want to know how they use it. I want to know what their administrative costs are. I want to know other things. And so the $250,000 is probably a fairly arbitrary amount. I don't know if it's the one that makes sense, but it's a question I have. And then the second part, and it's prompted a little bit by the last discussion, is, I mean, it may be worth our while for each of us to check with our United Way campaigns in our local communities. I mean, a lot of fundraising is targeted at that October date, and I do suspect that this is going to be an option that is going to be an option that some of the United Way people are going to have to deal with, because it's new competition for the dollar. So I'm going to check with my United Way people and see what they feel about it. You might want to do it in the other communities too.
Heather, can you give us a little information on the selection of the $250,000? Was that a suggestion from our drafter? Or is that tied to something that the 501c3s already have to do once they reach that level of annual budget?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know the answer right offhand. The criteria was taken from the United Way and the SHARE campaign, and so I'm not sure which or where that dollar amount came from. If Jeff is online, he may be able to answer that, but if not, I will find out and get back to the committee members.
And Jeff Clark, do you have you been listening in, and do you by chance have an answer to whether the $250,000 required audit is a federal requirement?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is it's not a federal requirement. I practice much smaller nonprofits. If I may, I just want to offer one other comment. As I said in my earlier comments, it's really individuals that power giving. And there's been some question about what we might gain by implementing the program. And just a rough calculation, if 5% of those individuals eligible for the dividend gave an average of $100, that would be an incremental $3 million a year that would go to support Alaska nonprofits. And, so that kind of impact over the first 3 years would add up. And I know that it's a concern both at the legislature and across Alaska communities that nonprofits become more sustainable. And I think there's a feeling that this might be one, only one of what will need to be several avenues to help nonprofits be more sustainable. But finally, the Rasmussen Foundation would, of course, gladly undertake a public awareness campaign around this should it become for be put into practice.
And Sharon, do you have any information of the 300,000 plus electronic applications that have come in, the percentage from smaller communities around the state? Is it, in fact, a tool used in urban Alaska and urban Alaska only?
Mr. Chairman, we're collecting that data as applications come in. We have it all broken out for 2004 and know from the 2004 by zip code that we had applications from every zip code in the state. Now, I haven't had a chance to break that down on a, do we have a higher percentage in Anchorage than we do in rural Alaska? That's the next step I want to go with the data, but I just got it for 2004 this week, and we're collecting it for 2005. Anecdotally, we seem to get more complaints from Anchorage people who don't want to file online than we do from the bush, but that probably isn't very reliable. For
That's just because they're living in Anchorage and they're cranky.
Be careful, Mr. Chair. Safe with me, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Senator Hawkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question on, as I look at the different categories and I see the youth component, I know some of my neighbors will ask me about Friends of the NRA and whether it would be a fit within the parameters here. I think, and I don't mean to get into specifics, but I will be asked that question because that's a big interest story. I don't.
Senator Hawkins, I don't believe so because of some of the lobbying activities that
NRA. There's a youth development program. I mean,
So we would just need to look, inquire about their specific status.
Right.
And then there's the second test where the entity, if it is a 501c3, cannot grant any of its money to the 501c4s and c6s. Because I know from myself tracking some of the nonprofits and political activities over the past couple of years, there's a little bit of money laundering going on.
I've read about that.
So we want to steer clear of that if possible. Okay, with that, we'll close the hearing for today. Heather, did we get an indication when Ms. Kaplan is going to be back and when we possibly would be bringing this back for the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I believe she returns on the 22nd of February, next Wednesday.
Okay.
So
it will not be before then. So if you've got, Senator Elton indicated he was going to check with his United Way. I know in the press release that I had the other day, we had a supportive quote from the United Way of the Tennessee Valley. But certainly would encourage all of you. We're from geographically different areas in the state, so we can act as information gathering, if each of our staffs make a call or two and bring that to committee staff's attention, my attention. So with that, we are adjourned for the day.